Podcasts of Homegrown are made possible thanks to support from listeners like you. Consider becoming a member of WFPL by calling 502-814-6565 or at the website wfpl.org. Thanks. Welcome back to Homegrown. I'm Janine Wishy.
I'm Bob Hill, and we got some good news and we got some bad news.
We do.
There's no other way to put it.
There's no other way to put it. And yeah, good news is that there's loads of All-America selections for this year. I think there's 10.
Yeah, that's the whole football team. Almost. It's
the most ever, if I can remember.
Yeah, the marketing machine is ramped up here.
Yeah, it is. So, and the fact, surely you all remember Noina Koivula-Wolfram, who we talk to every year, All-America selections in Downers Grove, Illinois. Noina retired, so we're going to meet the new executive director of the All-America selections in the National Garden Bureau, and her name is Diane Blazek. And she'll be talking about some of these, 2010 All-America selections, some pretty nice plants.
And mostly bad news, Jody Ellis from Purdue University.
Although we love Jody.
Yeah, and she does a great job, but she's talking about the emerald ash borer. Mm-hmm. And bluntly stated, either treat your ash tree or it's dead. Mm-hmm. There is no middle ground with your ash tree, folks.
Yeah. So some serious...
We worry about the wrong things, this country, this whole world.
Yeah.
This is something to worry about.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, some serious considerations to when you're assessing the whole ash tree situation. Yeah. And Jody talks about this stuff so well, too.
Yeah.
We always appreciate having her on. And we usually do so at least once a year. I want to say sometimes twice a year, just to find out really how fast this is progressing. But also, are there any new treatments? And in fact, there is a new product that can be used to treat, although it needs to be used by a professional.
Yeah.
So there can, as we said, some considerations in that.
But the ash borer's here. It's relentless and do something.
All right, Bob, what's going on in your garden?
Speaking of cutting down trees, which is what I was talking about. Yeah, I've cut down in the last year, I bet you I've cut down 4 or 5 or 6 big, healthy plants and trees and shrubs that just got too big in the wrong place.
Right.
Point being, you have to do that. You and I get asked probably once a month, I've got this 15-inch tree next to my foundation. Mm-hmm. I want to save it. Can I move it? No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At some point in your gardening life, you have to cut your losses or your gains in this case and cut them down. And I've learned to do this, and it's hard to do. But once you replace it with something that works, you don't remember the other one at all.
Right.
It's gone.
You get used to the change.
Yeah, immediately. And you've improved your landscape 99 times out of 100. So get out there and cut something down. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and it may, and it, wait and listen to Jody in the second part of the show, because it may need to be your ash tree.
Maybe your ash tree.
Aww.
Do you have some kinder, softer information for your, from the Wishy Estate?
I think I do.
Okay.
This time of the year, as it warms up, is just so fabulous. Oh, but it makes me realize I walk by to go do one thing, and then I realize, I still need to do that.
Yeah.
And this year it's been, fortunately, last year I took care of most of the blueberries. You know, I thinned out the blueberry shrubs. But this year, just yesterday, in fact, was doing some stuff, hauling some debris, walked by the blackberries. I'm like, I better get on this. And it's time to, you know, cut the old blackberry canes, which I should have done earlier, quite frankly.
Well,
old blackberry canes that fruited last year, you know, that we picked from, those need to be removed all the way to the ground. They will not produce any fruit.
Okay.
And save the new growth from last year that will produce growth for this year.
Now, do you prune that new growth back some?
Only if they have become really long canes.
Okay.
Otherwise, I just attach them. We've got those like plastic chain linky things that I use to attach them to the wire. So you cut away the old and then have to reattach the new ones to the trellising wires, and then we're good to go, really.
So you go to your chain linky thing at the store department.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like this,
no, I know what you mean.
You know, it's like this plastic tie stuff.
Yeah, they're chain linky things.
Yeah. And it's how you recycled tie things, basically.
I gotcha.
So yeah, if you do have, and I know lots of people have over the years invested in some fruit material like blueberries, blackberries, now's the time to get them pruned. And also, Bob, now's the time to fertilize them. And, you know, we've given up pretty much on the whole synthetic thing.
Right.
So we typically use cottonseed meal as a fertilizer this time of the year, just as those plants start to come awake. They need that little extra oomph. So the cottonseed meal helps.
And it's also a good time to plant new trees, and there's some Arbor Day tree drives going on.
It really is. Yeah. The actual Arbor Day Foundation, you could go to their website, and we'll provide a link through our website, of course. But they offer, Bob, like 10 trees.
Wow.
You get 2 of each type. if you give them a $10 donation. I mean, just a $10 donation. You can give them more, and that would be great. But they give you 2 American Redbuds, 2 Flowering Dogwoods, 2 Flowering Crab Apples, 2 Washington Hawthorns, which are good hawthorns, and 2 Golden Rain Trees.
And no ash trees.
And no ash trees. They know what's going on.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, if you know, you can plant a couple in your own yard. You can plant some at your grandma's, wherever.
It's a great
deal. They really just want people to plant more trees, so they're providing access, in fact, to some interesting trees.
And speaking of new things, on the other end of the spectrum, you have annuals, some hot annuals coming up. And
some vegetables.
Some new ones. Some perennials,
That's right. The All-America Selections 2010. And Diane Blazek is the executive director. She's joining us today to talk about them. Executive director of All-America Selections, as well as the National Garden Bureau, both are nonprofit organizations that promote the use of good plants, including annuals, vegetables, perennials, and more. Welcome to Homegrown, Diane, for the first time. It's good to have you on.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Great. So, okay, most of our listeners, and Bob and I are, you know, have been used to talking to Nona Koivula Wolfram for all these years. Introduce yourself to us. What's your background, Diane? How'd you get into the executive director position?
Well, first of all, I grew up on a farm, so that just makes me a natural when it comes to wanting to garden and harvest from the land.
Obviously, yes.
And then I spent 15 years at Ball Publishing. So we were into trade publishing. We had magazines for commercial greenhouse growers and garden centers.
And Ball Seed.
So and Ball Seed actually owned Ball Publishing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all part of the Ball Horticultural Company.
Okay.
Oh, and we also published consumer gardening books.
Mm-hmm.
Then I say I had a bit of a midlife crisis, so I just put it on a change of pace.
Good for you.
Yes, exactly. You got to follow those crises. I sometimes
gotcha.
Yeah.
And so I ran a PR firm for about a year, and that's where I really picked up a lot of information about social media and just how to work with a lot of the writers, editors, journalists that are out there. And then I heard that Nona was retiring, and I decided to throw my hat in the ring.
Great. So it sounds like you've got a good background in terms of understanding gardeners, but also understanding pretty much the mission statement of the All-America Selections to get really good plants out to the general gardening public. So with that said, what's the general criteria as you select the All-America winners for each year?
Well, right now we are trialing seed varieties. You know, some plants come from vegetative cuttings, but that is how we got our start. And as of right now, we are trialing never before sold seed varieties. So these have not been on the market. So that's number one, the very exciting part of it.
Brand new.
Yes. And then we get those out to our judges. And what they do is they grow them for a full growing season. You know, they're planting the seeds right now in the greenhouse. They'll transplant them outside. And they judge it on all kinds of characteristics that the home gardener would be interested in. If it's a vegetable, they will actually taste the vegetable, cook with it. We have some very creative judges that, if they're at a university site, will even have maybe their hospitality students come out and make things with them.
Mm-hmm.
But what they'll do is judge it on heat tolerance, drought tolerance. Last summer, they were judging it on too much rain tolerance, the amount of flowers, the flower size, you know, the scent, and just will it perform in average Jane's garden, and will it do well, and is it exciting enough where it will attract attention? So there's all these criteria that they look at, and then they give it a score, and we compile all the scores together, and if it's high enough, then it is deemed... It's not a deemed a winner yet. It's deemed a holdover. Then the breeder has to meet criteria, meaning I have enough seed that I can sell to the market before it's declared a winner, because we don't want to promote something and then find out that it's not available to the consumer.
Right. Okay. So it seems like it's... The protocol has changed a little bit this year because it was a bit of a staggered introduction. The first 4 introductions came out when everybody would expect it back in late 2009. And we saw, let's see, a Gallardia, Mesa Yellow, Snapdragon, 20 Peach, Viola, Endurio, Sky Blue, Martien, Zinnia, Sahara, Starlight Rose. We'll talk about those first. But let me ask you this. Was there a reason why you guys kind of changed the protocol and had this kind of staggered introduction? Because just last week or so, 5 more were introduced as well. Is there a practical reason?
The practical reason is more like times are changing. Mm-hmm. Communication styles are changing. You know, what used to be a consumer publication that might have a 6 to 9 month lead time with their editorial, that's changed.
Right.
And it's all because of the digital age. Things are even changing on the commercial side, too, as far as, you know, the mass merchants hearing about this and wanting this. They want to react. Everybody wants the new stuff. And we just talked to every segment of the chain and decided that it didn't make sense to stagger it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If we have something new, if it's available, then let's start putting it out there and having it be there and be available.
Sure. Yeah, because information travels so quickly now.
Mm-hmm.
Why hold it back?
Right, right.
Okay.
Now, let's jump into the flowers because I like this first one. The Gallardia Mesa Yellow is the first hybrid blanket flower that's compact. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, so the Gallardia was one that was introduced, and you're right, it's a beautiful plant, nice and compact for us, and that's the one that the judges were just like, you know, we really like this plant habit in that it's not going to get too tall and leggy, but it has all these blooms on it,
mm-hmm.
so it's going to be a great eye-popper in the garden.
So hold up to that blanket flower sort of reputation, but be a little more tidy, if you will.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Snapdragon's beautiful. 20 peach, sort of like a yellow and a peach color.
Yeah, it's that bicolor that attracted the interest of the judges on that one.
Mm-hmm. The next one from the original four,
mm-hmm.
the Zinnia Zahara Starlight Rose. Talk about these, and then why don't you go ahead, Diane, and talk about the additional Zahara categories of zinnias that also made the All-America selections.
Right, right. So we've got the Zahara Starlight Rose, and then later in the other introductions for 2010, we've got the double Zaharas. So that was the big attraction with that later group is being the double flowers.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of habit do they have? Are they, you know, more bedding plants? Or are they going to be those big old-fashioned, you know, cut zinnias that we bring into the house for bouquets?
Well, they're still only about 12 inches tall, so, you know, if they're cut flowers, they're not going to be super long stems, but yet they're going to be short enough where they still look great in the garden.
Mm-hmm. So a good bedding plant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then some mouth-watering stuff. The Watermelon Shiny Boy sounds good. What's that all about?
Well, you know what's neat? This one comes from a breeder in Asia, and because of the lack of yard space, gardening space, a lot of the vegetables that we're seeing bred there are compact patio growing or vertical, and this is the one that I'm excited to try at home. I've never grown a watermelon, and so we want to try growing it on trellises. Of course, you'll have to support the fruit once it gets on there.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there are these nice little round sweet melons, but yet you can grow them in a small space. You don't need a lot of land or yardage
mm-hmm.
to
sure.
grow them.
Sure, because, you know, that's the thing of a very significant trend in terms of different vegetables that will either grow well in containers or grow vertical because of space. So pretty exceptional to have a watermelon that fits in that
small
category
egg.
That's
exactly.
not going to break free and smash on the ground.
Yeah, we hope to have a lot more of that because, like you say, it's a trend.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got the Pepper Cajun Bell, which sounds hot and hot. Is that true? Or is it...
Well, it's like sweet and hot. That's the unique thing about this one is that flavor combination. Like the judges were saying, you know, you bite into it, and it's nice and sweet, and then you get that after kick after you've chewed it.
Okay.
So that's good.
Yeah, I think we need to create a whole line of recipes around that Cajun Bell. I think that would be fun.
So those are the two vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
One more annual, a marigold,
mm-hmm.
an F1 hybrid, Moonsong Deep Orange.
Yes, yes. That one, unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot of it, but what I'm hearing the judges say is it's that coloration.
Okay.
That deep orange is what they were so impressed with. And obviously the performance, too. It's not just color.
Uh-huh.
It has to perform on all fronts.
Uh-huh. So okay, it seems, too, that in the last couple of years, Diane, All America selections have included plants that are more closely considered perennials than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
And this year you all have an echinacea
mm-hmm.
called Pow Wow Wild Berry.
Right.
Why the move towards perennials?
You know, this seems to be something that's happening at the breeder and grower level to broaden the scope of available plants. You know, it's like those lines are blurring. Is is it a shrub or is it a perennial or is it a bedding plant? And, you know, annuals versus perennials. I see people putting perennials in containers, which, you know, we know up in here in our climate, it's not going to overwinter unless you treat it right in the garage or something. But I think that's what they're trying to do is just give more varieties to the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're talking about here is basically a first-year flowering perennial. So the instructions on the culture information is planting it before a certain time, and you will get a lot of flowers the first year. So it's also going toward the American instant gratification, if you will. So here's this perennial, and you're going to get a lot of big show the first year, which is very important to people.
Sure, sounds good. We'll be looking for all of the All-America selections for 2010 this year. Thank you, Diane. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much.
Diane Blasek is the Executive Director of the National Garden Bureau and the All-America selections, both nonprofit organizations that promote the use of annuals and vegetables and perennials and other things, all tested, tried, and true for American gardens. If you'd like more information on the 2010 All-America selections, you can visit our website at WFPL.org.
Coming up after the break, preventative measures for the emerald ash borer. You're listening to Homegrown on 89.3 WFPL.
You're listening to Homegrown on 89.3 WFPL. Janine Wishy and Bob Hill here in the studio for the spring drive. We want to reach $500,000, so we hope that you'll help us and support public radio. Call us at 814-6565.
Support for WFPL comes from Frontier Airlines, connecting Louisville to the West with nonstop service to Denver beginning April 19th. A complete listing of Frontier destinations is available by clicking specials at frontierairlines.com. From Limwalker Tree Service, local providers of tree care and preservation focused on the science of tree care. Limwalker's arborists provide pruning, fertilizing, bracing, removal, and disease treatment, including emerald ash borer infestation. Limwalker, 634-0400, online at limwalkertree.com.
And we are here. Give us a call, 814-6565. Help us meet our $500,000 goal for the spring drive. Janine Wishy, Bob Hill, hosts of Homegrown, we're here. We need to meet an hourly goal of $4,500. We still have over $4,000, Bob.
We're going to do it,
25
though,
after.
I believe.
All right.
I believe.
Well, we do have some folks to thank, though, that have called 502-814-6565, or some, in fact, have gone online at WFPL.org. Thanks to Finbar and Kathy Schmidt, folks that I know from way back when.
Finbar, yeah.
So it's always nice to see that your friends are supporting you as well as strangers. Charles and Fran Thompson, thank you very much for your support. We have a new member who went to the website, Elizabeth Foost. Michael Varnersdale, thanks very much. And let's see. Here's another friend that's sort of familiar.
Uh-oh.
Janet and Bob Hill.
Oh, no.
Janet's sitting out reading her book, waiting for you to finish up your duties here. And she also supported public radio.
She has spent her whole life waiting for Bob.
That's right. She did it in
God
person.
God knows I appreciate that.
She did it in person.
Okay.
Supports Bob in every faction of his life,
she
I'm
does.
Sure. But you can support us by calling 814-6565.
Yeah, you mentioned a new member a little while ago, and very encouraging. A lot of these are new members.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of goes to our point that people are looking for an outlet,
right,
some news, and we got a bunch of them.
There's always young people coming of age.
Yeah. I want to thank Larry Cooper and Toronto Foods, very nice. Elizabeth Schilling, Sue Jeffries, Veronica Kevorkian, Richard Briscoe, I believe it is, Anonymous, nice pledge, Anonymous, Angela Gaudet, G-A-U-D-E-T,
mm-hmm,
that'd be French, I believe, William Webb, and
there's a lot of folks.
Yeah, Aaron, Ralph, and John Tobacos. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, indeed. Our hourly goal during Homegrown is $4,500, so help us meet that by calling 814-6565. I think our drive totals, you know, over $156,000, but we will end the drive as soon as we reach that $500,000 goal. It helps support programs like Homegrown that you're listening to, that Bob and I love doing, but additionally, NPR programming that that we purchase, you know, all kinds of stuff. So we do need that for all three stations to thrive so we can bring you, you know, entertainment, but also information,
right.
All of that as we continue to, you know, be knowledgeable about things.
As a very nice added incentive, as a grand prize this year, if you pledge during the spring membership drive, you're automatically entered to win a weekend trip to see My Morning Jacket from
front row. I want that.
Of the 2010 New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival.
Awesome.
Three-night hotels at the Sheraton New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Airfare, two tickets to the Jazz Fest, an escort for you and a guest, possibly Miss Janine Wishy, to the front row.
I guess I probably wouldn't be eligible, though, huh?
No, you wouldn't.
Darn it.
You sure wouldn't. But that's a very nice prize. That's something else they've done lately in these fun drives, is give these wonderful grand prizes.
They do.
Trips.
Just a little incentive, but, you know, public radio in and of itself should be incentive enough, right?
Yes, yes.
Because we bring you great programming, help you stay informed. Gardening is one of the things that we love to do, but there's much more. So call us, show your support, 814-6565, or go online at WFPL.org.
$4,500.
That's right, and we still
help Bob and Janine out.
Totals now, we still need around 4,000. So
come
give
on,
us
gardeners.
A call.
Let's go.
That's right. Give us a call, 814-6565.
Welcome back to Homegrown. This is Bob Hill.
And Janine Wishy. And for the not-so-good news part.
Yeah, I know. The emerald ash borer.
Emerald ash borer. Ashes are fabulous trees, aren't they?
Yes.
But they're on the you-know-what list.
Yeah, I worry
Do
about...
Do not plant.
They got the good old Louisville Slugger made out of ashes.
Yeah.
They're dealing with this, too.
They are, indeed are dealing. They, in fact, in their tour, they talk about the emerald ash borer and the impact that it's had on their ash tree business, or the ash harvesting part of bat making. But in the last, I want to say 15, 20 years even, the ash trees, the value of them as tough plants in landscape situations and parking lots, you know, municipal areas, great in compacted soils and developments, basically, where new houses were built. So it's been planted.
Oh, heavily, yeah.
Heavily.
Yeah.
And now we're finding that it has this terrible, terrible pest problem, the emerald ash borer.
But it can be saved.
Can be
there's
saved.
Hope.
There is hope.
Yeah.
But there's diligence involved in this.
Due diligence,
And also some financial commitment as well. But before any of that, we need to understand what's going on. And Jody Ellis is joining us to do that, as she always does the past couple of years, to talk about this subject. A little general background on the emerald ash borer, if people, you know, have been on Mars and have not heard about the potential impact that this pest can have on ash trees in the area. Give us a rundown.
Well, emerald ash borer is an insect, and it came over from Asia, probably northeast China. It came over in wooden packing material.
Mm-hmm.
It is a borer beetle, which means its larvae or its young live underneath the wood, so that's why it's able to survive in packing material and things. It was first found in Detroit in 2002. However, we believe it came over probably more likely in the early 1990s.
Right.
But by the time we found it in Detroit, there was a serious problem going on up there with ash trees. I should mention, too, that ash trees are very common trees, lovely trees, and they are a substantial resource for states in the Midwest as lumber and as street trees. Anyway, emerald ash borer kills ash trees, I should say 100% of the time, unless you use pesticides to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
It has already gone through Michigan, pretty much wiped out ash trees in Michigan, which has caused municipalities and cities a lot of problems with budgets and things because ash trees don't stand well once they're dead. They fall over on cars and buildings and hopefully not, but sometimes people. It is a disaster. It is a disaster that kind of moves in slow motion, and I am sorry to say that it has arrived in your area.
Yeah.
People, probably homeowners especially, are going to be very, very impacted by this insect. If they have ash trees, there are things that they can do to help protect their ash trees, or really one of the most important things is knowing which trees to save and which trees not to bother with. So I'm sure that we'll be talking about that during our time together today.
Yeah.
And Jody, what are those symptoms you mentioned?
People
will know.
Right. Well, the first thing that people are going to see is their ash trees just don't look well. And what I mean by that is that a tree in full summer, an ash tree in full summer, will start displaying symptoms of losing the top part. It's going bald, if you will. It's starting to lose the leaves on the top part and starting to look a little sparse. And if someone goes in and takes a closer look at that tree, they may notice that there are tiny, and I mean tiny, like maybe a 16th of an inch wide, tiny little D, capital D-shaped exit holes on the branches and limbs, and possibly down the trunk. If some of the bark has fallen off, do not pull off bark to look for this, because that will kill your tree right there. Yeah. But if some of the bark has fallen off, they may see some very curvy S-shaped channels underneath the bark, and that's where these larvae are destroying the ash tree's vascular tissue. That's how it kills the tree. Mm-hmm. It makes it so that the tree can no longer move food and water up and down.
The life cycle is such, when would that actual borer show up?
Well, we're getting close to that time. They are probably in Kentucky. It's a little further south. You can probably expect to see the adult beetles coming out from underneath the bark at the first part of May.
With that said, what are the effective methods that have been determined thus far by entomologists?
I want to reiterate this very important point.
Right.
If you are in an area with emerald ash borer and you do not chemically protect your ash trees, those trees will eventually be attacked and they will die.
Okay.
That sounds really harsh, but it's a given that that's true.
Wow.
If you are, we talked a little bit about choosing trees to treat. If you have an ash tree that's in beautiful shape and it's important to your landscape, you know, it's your main shade tree or whatever, that's one that you want to consider saving.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a scrubby ash tree in the backyard that you don't pay a lot of attention to, forget it. It's not worth the money, because you will invest some money in this process.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have an ash tree or two or three that you want to do something about, the first thing you want to do is go out to it with a measuring tape, and at about 4.5 feet from the ground, measure its circumference, just like you're measuring yourself for a pair of pants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If that tree is, if its circumference is less than about 45 inches, you can treat it by yourself at home. And that's assuming, and this is a big assumption, that that tree is healthy.
Okay.
If it's been hit by lightning or it's got branches falling off from ice damage and all, don't bother. The tree cannot be safe. But if it's healthy, less than 45 inches in circumference, you can go out to any store that sells insecticides, and you can find a product whose active ingredient is called imidacloprid. It's very simple. You mix it in a bucket according to package directions, and you put it around the roots of the tree, and you want to do this in Kentucky in early April, so you give the tree plenty of time to suck up that fluid with the pesticide in it and distribute it throughout.
Mm-hmm.
When these larvae wake up and take a bite of the tree, they're going to die.
Okay.
And it will protect your tree through those summer months. If your tree happens to be over 45 inches in around its waist, and it's in good health, once again, I can't emphasize that enough. If it's in good health and you want to do something to protect it, what you'll need to do is hire a tree care person, because you will not be able to protect a tree that large by yourself. You need some special equipment and special formulations of imidacloprid. What they're going to do is inject the tree. They're going to inject this stuff right into the tissue of the tree, and they're going to inject it in several places all around the base of the tree, so that that pesticide is in that tissue and spreads well. Just taking it up by the roots, like pouring a soil drench, is not, on a big tree, is just not enough.
So more of an intravenous sort of feed.
Well, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Sometimes they use what they call a high-pressure soil injection, where they inject it into the soil around the tree so that it really gets a shock into those roots and goes up. So that's how you might deliver imidacloprid. And you have to do that once a year, around early April, and it is a great product. It works very, very well. However, there is a product that's been out for a couple years, and it's the name of it is emamectin benzoate. Oh. Yeah, but you got to learn a new word now.
Spell that one for me.
Emamectin benzoate.
Okay.
It is right now. It's still under patent, so it's called Triage, and that's TREE-AGE.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Now this is a product that has a higher kill rate than imidacloprid. That doesn't mean that imidacloprid is a bad product, because it certainly isn't. But the best thing about Triage, it's delivered with the injection right into the tree, just like imidacloprid is, but you only have to use it every 2 to 3 years. It has real staying power. At least that's what the studies have indicated. Now, it's probably you probably find it's a little more expensive to have done, but on the other hand, you balance that out against the fact that you're only going to do it every 2 to 3 years, right?
Well, and also, too, I suppose it's very expensive to have some of these large. My mother has a humongous ash tree in her backyard. Mm-hmm. It would cost a great deal of money to have that tree taken down.
Right.
So you do kind of have to weigh
those
issues in addition to the value of the tree in terms of your home.
And one thing I'd have your mom think about, too, is ash trees are like people. They get old. And if the tree is really, really large, it's probably getting older and it's probably having issues with its circulatory system, like so many of us
like the rest of us.
Right, and it may not be able to be protected as well because of its age. But if it's a huge tree, but it's still extremely healthy and has great leaves, and it's important to your landscape, and you don't want to spend $10,000 to have it taken down, I say go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Jody, is imidacloprid forever? Is there... Once this scourge disappears in 10 or 15, 20 years, can you stop using it?
Boy, you are so optimistic. You are. This
30,
this,
40 years?
This scourge is not going to disappear.
Okay, so it's forever. Once you start doing it?
Well, yeah. You will. We, our people who are alive now, can plan on doing this every single year to protect their ash trees. And, you know, things change. If you let me give you an example. If you have a really small ash tree that's less than a couple inches in diameter, well, don't bother with pesticides, because by the, you know, you just take it out and replace it. You don't want to pay for pesticides for
that's
the next
serious,
80 years, you know.
You're right.
And I know you're planning on living another 80 years, so, you know, that could be quite an expense.
I have too much to do.
That's what I mean.
When my tree gets to 45 inches, do I turn it over to the pros?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you should.
Yeah.
Definitely. And they can help you make decisions, too. A good arborist is worth their weight in gold. They can help you make decisions about what trees are good to save, which ones you want to maybe, you know, if you have a tree that you're so-so about, go ahead now and plant a small species of another kind. And by the time that ash tree dies, this little tree you planted will have some size.
Yeah. All right. So now's the time, folks, to take some preemptive measures if you can. Contact your certified arborist. Otherwise, if you can't.
It's over.
Yeah.
It's imidacloprid or nothing.
Yeah.
Or death.
And mostly nobody's selling ash trees anymore. And this is the reason why. So.
That's why. All right. I am going to shamelessly promote myself.
All right.
And I'll tell you to go to Google and type in Purdue Emerald Ash Borer, and you'll go to my website, and all of this information that we've talked about and much, much more is right there. Even if you're in Kentucky, you're still welcome at Purdue.
Thanks, Jody.
Except during basketball season.
Well, that's a different story.
And we'll definitely provide a link to your website from our website as well.
That's
so
great.
Good information as always, Jody. Thanks.
Thank you. It's great talking to you guys.
Jody Ellis is an exotic insects education coordinator in the Department of Entomology at Purdue University. She's part of a team monitoring the spread of the emerald ash borer in the state of Indiana, and of course always helps her friends here in Kentucky as well. For more information on the emerald ash borer, control measures, and the cost calculator that they have, please go to our website at wfpl.org.
Coming up, a few listener questions and another chapter in Bob's Fabulous Plant Stories. You're listening to Homegrown on 89.3 WFPL.
Yes, and we're here today. Give us a call at 502-814-6565. It's our spring drive, and we have a $500,000 goal we need to meet, so help us do that. You can also go to our website at wfpl.org. Again, call us, 814-6565.
Support for WFPL comes from the Speed Art Museum. Celebrity sightings abound with iconic images of Albert Einstein, Audrey Hepburn, and Andy Warhol in the exhibit The Most Famous People in the World, Karsh 100, on view at the Speed Art Museum. Details at speedmuseum.org. From the Choral Arts Society, James Reitmeier, conductor, performing Faure's Requiem and Finzi's for St. Cecilia, in a performance created to be both spiritual and spirited. Sunday, March 28th at the University of Louisville's Comstock Hall. Information available at 228-1176.
Good afternoon. I'm Janine Wishy.
With Bob Hill.
And we are indeed here. It's spring on the calendar, outside, and it's our spring drive. So call us at 502-814-6565 or go online at WFPL.org and show your support for public radio, including Homegrown.
Yeah, our goal for this hour is $4,500. We're a few turnips short at this point.
We are indeed.
But we believe in you turnip hustlers out there. You'll come through for us. And really, Janine and I have been doing this show for 8 or 9 years now. I cannot believe how long
I know,
it's been.
It's amazing.
And it's kind of the highlight of our week,
we
I think,
it.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
We love to do this. And we get together and we plan and we plot. Like some of the upcoming shows to look forward to in the next few weeks, we're going to have an expert on roots from Florida. Not the movie, but
Woody
the
roots.
The Woody roots and what they do and how they work. We kind of take them for granted. We put the tree in the ground or plant in the ground and say, well, the roots are gone. But they're down there, they're working. We're going to have Alan Armitage, who's a legend in the perennial plant world, University of Georgia, talking about vines and climb, which he's got a new book. And then Bob Barnhart, the Louisville Orchestra guy, is going to come in a couple weeks. And
there
talk about,
is a connection.
Yeah. Yeah, there is, too. He's going to talk about great classical music and gardening and nature.
That's right.
So he's going to be fun.
So if you want to support us, you can go online at WFPL.org or you can call us
at
814-656. Okay, so like that's a number that everybody knows except
yeah.
Bob. So we hope that it's etched in your mind at this point.
Well, let me try it. Call us at 814-6565.
Very good. And what's the website, Bob?
The website is WFPL.org.
You say it on the show all the time.
WFPL.org.
Okay.
WFPL.org.
So, yeah, we do need your help. Support Homegrown this hour. Our goal for the hour is $4,500. We're at about $3,700.
Oh, my gosh.
$100 remaining.
They're going to throw us
remaining,
off the air.
Remaining. But the
they love us. We know that.
They do. But, you know, we want to show it in numbers so that we can walk away and feel good that we've
done
our part during the spring drive. But call us 814-6565. Folks that have done that, and this is sort of funny, Sherry's not funny, but she is from Memphis, Indiana.
Hoosiers.
Sherry Kickinen, I think. But the comment is, go Cats. So she's probably from Kentucky. But regardless, Indiana or Kentucky, show your support for Homegrown and public radio at 814-6565. Thanks also to Elizabeth Waters, I believe it is. Thank you to Patricia Egan and Kimberly Maddox for, you know, showing your support during our program, Homegrown, but also for public radio. And you know, since this is the only Sunday that the drive is you know, on, it's the only time you can show your support for Homegrown. So please do so. And if you do so now, it means that the drive ends early. And we've got to reach that $500,000 goal. At this point, we're at almost $160,000. Let's see, in our remaining for the hour to reach the $4,500 is 3,100. That way too many numbers.
Well, I know.
The only number you need to know, whether or not Bob can remember it, is
502-814-6565.
Very good.
I'm coachable.
Very good.
Another number you might remember is if you pledge during the spring membership, you can go, if you win the contest, you go see My Morning Jacket from the front row at the 2010 New Orleans Jazz and Heritage
That's
Festival.
Super cool.
That'd be fun.
And there's a Sunday incentive as well. You're registered to win 2 tickets to the Julep Ball on Derby Eve.
Yeah.
And, you know, who doesn't want to engage in Derby festivities in the spring? But the real spring thing we need you to engage in is the drive here.
Bob and Janine.
Help us end it soon. Call us at 814-6565 or go online at WFPL.org.
Our
Thanks.
Fate is in your hands.
That's folks. Right. Thank you. Welcome back to Homegrown. I'm Janine Wishy.
Bob Hill here with a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
I'll even answer one this week.
All right. How
it's a whole new ball game here, kiddo.
Oh, this is a perfect one for
you. I just like
you.
To test your knowledge from time
to
time, like once a week.
I know. Age before beauty, right?
Hey, God.
All right, Bob, this is from Beth. She has a royal purple smoke bush, Cattinus, that she purchased at the end of a season sale last year. It was looking kind of pitiful, but she nursed it back to health, but she'd left it unpruned last year. Now, she says, it's grown with one main branch about 3 feet tall, and then all of the shrubby branches are coming off of that, so it looks kind of like a tree form. And she wants an actual shrub form.
Right.
So she's wondering if she can prune it a certain way to encourage more shrubby growth. She's worried because there's nothing going on except just one trunk. So she's worried, you know, about where she can prune to actually encourage a bushier format.
Yeah, royal purple is a great tree. It's got those beautiful deep purple leaves and they're easily pruned. Mm-hmm. I prune mine every year. You can just kind of round it off into a small shrub shape. Even if you cut that main stem back to the height of the other ones, you'll be fine. They grow 3 or 4 or 5 feet a year.
So it's kind of like a buddleia, don't you think?
Yeah, they're very easy to prune, and in fact, they welcome it, I think.
Yeah. So do you think it would, if she pruned the trunk back kind of hard, do you think it would sucker from the roots?
Well, or sucker from the roots or from the base, certainly, because I've got a Grace, which is a combination smoke tree that gets about 15, 20 feet tall, and it grows 6 or 8 feet a year. So yeah, as long as they keep them happy, and smoke trees are hard to...
To get rid of.
Yeah, they are.
But they don't have a reputation for being all neat and tidy either.
No, but that's not why you get them.
Yeah.
You get them for that wonderful purple leaf and for that irregular look and then a great smoke.
Yeah.
So, yeah, prune it and just kind of round it off and you'll be absolutely fine.
There we go. All right, one more question.
From Phyllis for Janine.
All right.
I heard you say you ordered potatoes. From whence do you order? She's also, we'll do one of these one at a time. Where do you get your potatoes from?
I get my potatoes from Wood Prairie, which is up in Maine. It's a catalog, Wood Prairie Farm.
Yeah.
And mostly because they have different varieties that I particularly like to grow, and they're certified organic seed potatoes. But you can buy them at local garden centers,
too. That's the point. She wants different vegetables, she talks about. Where's the best place to get seeds for varieties? She wants rainbow chard. So, as you say, just go to a local store.
Yeah.
They have all these things.
They really do. It's like, I like to support my local nurseries.
Yeah, I do too.
And this time of the year, they're getting their seeds in, and they're getting them from all the places that the catalogs we use.
Talk about,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're ordering their seeds from those places.
There's never been a more diverse seeds than now. Never.
Yeah, exactly. So I would check with your local garden centers. And she also had a question about chard that she had trouble with it 1 year. And that's going to happen from time to time as well. Do you know what I mean? Could just be the season. Could be that, you know, maybe the seeds weren't very good. It doesn't necessarily mean that it would happen again.
If you have more seedy questions for Bob or Janine, visit the Homegrown page at WFPL.org. Email us at homegrown@WFPL.org or call us at 502-814-8246.
All right, Bob, it's a plant story day. What do you have for us?
I'm going to test your alleged knowledge of Latin.
Okay.
Phytolacca.
What?
Yep.
Oh, like Phyto, like the sun?
Perennial weed of North and South America, East Asia, and New Zealand.
Oh, I know what it is.
What?
Poke.
You got it.
I do.
Doggone you.
Just because it came up, it came up a couple weeks ago.
You just ruined my
life. That's the only reason I know.
Pokeberry.
Pokeweed, yeah.
Yeah, poke bush, pokeberry, poke root, poke salad, Annie.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that. And inkberry, of course.
Yeah.
And if the cowboys eat it, it's called cowpoke.
Oh, yeah? No. You had me going there for like a half a second.
I know.
Shoot.
You know, you can't miss it. It's this tall, gangly, pink and red stems on the thing and crinkly leaves and these greenish-white flowers with these dark purple berries. It gets 10 feet tall. The name Phytolacca comes from the Greek phytos, meaning plant, and the Latin lacca, meaning red dye.
Oh, okay.
Red dye plant.
Huh.
Yeah, you know, of course, you know, parts of all of it really is toxic. But it's been eaten for years, particularly in a southern diet among maybe, I think, poor people a lot. The trick is, and don't try this at home, boys and girls, unless you know what you're doing, you must pick new leaves or shoots in early spring before the red color appears, and then you boil it 3 times to reduce the toxin.
My mom ate it once, and she had an upset stomach for a couple days.
Yeah, that's the thing. You boil it 3 times, you think all the nutrients are gone anyway. What's left? But you know, it tastes like asparagus or spinach, according to Carol Reese. We've had her on the show who had an article on horticulture about it. I'd like to hear from somebody who actually tried this stuff and ate it.
Well, you can talk to Mom.
We can do that. We'll call up your mom.
Yeah. She'll tell you how she had upset stomach for 3 days.
I want success stories.
I'll cook some up for you maybe this spring.
Okay.
Will you eat it if I do it? I'll eat it with you.
Funk down on the desk here.
Well, the worst thing that happened would be in stomach
like your mom,
upset.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Polk's got a lot of great history. The pioneers used it as a diuretic.
Mm-hmm. See?
Swollen glands and tonsillitis. Grated Polk roots were used by Native Americans as poultice to treat rashes. Uh-huh. It's been used forever as a red dye or ink. This is really neat.
That's the inkberry.
The U.S. Declaration of Independence was written in fermented pokeberry juice.
Awesome.
Civil War letters written back home is kind of sad. In pokeberry ink, that's all they had. Uses a jelly to help arthritis. And, of course, you have the famous song, Poke Salad Annie, by Tony Joe White. Name another Tony Joe White hit.
I don't know.
Time's up.
Okay.
But it was covered by Elvis and Tom Jones.
Okay.
So it's this Poke Salad Festival is actually Harlan, Kentucky has a Poke Salad Festival every year.
Well, maybe we need to touch base with those folks.
We do, yeah.
Okay.
The good news is birds can eat it without apparent harm because the small seeds pass right through them, but then they spread to your garden.
That's right.
That's the bad news. So it's poison, but it's not. Comes with a poem. So name just one other weed with fame so strong, both Tom Jones and Elvis would honor it in song. A weed so prolific from New Zealand to New York to be served as a salad with hominy and pork. Or taken as a cure for bad glands and rashes, provided 3 times you remove it from ashes. Were it boiled quite fiercely before turning red, a recipe to be followed or you'll end up quite dead. A weed, however, with a proud side we can all see. A weed with a large role in American history. Dating back to a time that we know so well. The day we told England to go jump in the well.
All right. We have a mission.
Oh, you're going to bring in some poke salad?
I'm going to my mom. Well, okay. Not that we need to take it lessons from mom, but yeah. It's really good in scrambled eggs, apparently.
We're going to try it live here?
Sure. Why not?
Thump.
All right. No, like I said, just a stomach ache, nothing more, nothing
okay,
less.
Coach.
All right. Well, that ends another edition of Homegrown. Next week on the show, we meet the new director of the 21st Century Parks.
Homegrown is produced by that notorious slowpoke, Brad Yost. Studios of WFPL. I'm Bob Hill.
And I'm Janine Wishy. Join us next week for Homegrown on WFPL. If Bob Hill cracks you up just like he cracked himself up, give us a call and support Homegrown and Public Radio at WFPL.org. You can do it online or call us at 502-814-6565.
Support for WFPL comes from IU Southeast, hosting the Sanders Speakers Series March 29th at 6:30, featuring veteran Democratic political strategist Donna Brazile and former White House Press Secretary Dana Perino. Ticket information is available at 941-2526.
Indeed. Welcome back. I'm Janine Wishy.
I'm the old cowpoke, Bob Hill.
And we're hosts of Homegrown. And we're here to ask you to help us meet our hourly goal of $4,500. We have not quite met that yet. So we've got, let's show everybody up. We've got 5 more minutes to do that. We're just over 159,000 so far. We want to reach 500,000 and then the drive is over at that very moment. So help us make that happen sooner than later. I love this comment, Bob. This is from a new member. They called 814-6565. Loves the weekend shows and This American Life. Feels guilty that she listens all day and hadn't joined until now. So if you're among those, come on, get on board. You know, it can be $10 for the year. It can be $10 a day. It can be $10 a week. You know, whatever makes sense for you. We'd certainly like to have you aboard. 814-6565. Thanks to Jenny and Marcus Osborne. Andy Smart, my husband.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it. Likes HG and FPL. That's code for Homegrown and WFPL. Thanks to Bob and Virginia Bush as well. They enjoy listening and they're backing it up by becoming a member. Go online, WFPL.org, or call 814-6565.
Yeah, very simply put, imagine your life without public radio.
I can't.
I can't either.
Yeah.
And so you listeners out there, you enjoy what you're listening to on all three stations, and I go back and forth on all the stations depending on my mood. Imagine your life without public radio. And it's just will be totally different.
Right.
And you can support that. You can keep this thing going. And we enjoy it. And it gets better all the time. We're filling a niche that badly needs filling. We need public radio. We need your support. Period.
We do. And it is public radio. So that means the public needs to be involved. We don't get funding from, in the same way that commercial broadcasts do. Not much federal funding, a little bit, not anything. From the city, so we need the public, part of Louisville Public Media. The $500,000 goal is going to support all three stations, including WFPL, including Homegrown, a show that Bob and I love to bring to you every week, as we all, that's the thing, we're all learning. We have a great opportunity to sort of bring that to you in a more in-depth way than you can get other places. We can talk to people for 20 minutes.
I'm sorry. Today's show is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. Emerald Ash Borer, we've talked about three or four times over the years because it's a great tree and you can save what you have if you do something right away. If you don't, it's gone.
Right.
And the same with the new plants. Every year we're looking for new plants to try in our gardens, for you to try in your gardens. We bring in experts to discuss that, and that's what we did today, and we continue to do that.
Yeah. So help us continue to do that by helping to support public radio, become a member, renew your membership. We are still over $2,700 remaining in our goal, and we only have a couple, like one more minute, Bob.
Oh, no.
I hate failing.
We're not
failing. Help us.
We're not failing.
Help us and become a member, 814-6565. Somebody had commented in here, how can I turn down Janine Wishy's plea to become a member? And she is a new member, or he is a new member. I'm sorry, David. But thanks to David Woolams. If you're like David, listen to us beg. Please become a member of Public Radio. Thanks to Lee Shea, Sam Graham, Stuart and James Mattingly, Shelley Elms, Mary O'Connor, and Dennis Gravad, new and renewing members to Public Radio, 814-6565 or online at WFPL.org.
Now, where else could you get a great Latin word of the week and a really bad poem on the same show?
You have so much talent, though, Bob, because the poems are awesome. I'm amazed that you do what you do.
They're an act of desperation, by and large.
All right. Well, another act of desperation. Become a new member. Renew your membership. 814-6565. Thanks very much.